Leadership isn't about titles. It's about vision, resilience, and growth. I'm Erica Butler, and on the Go Hire show, we talk about the tools and strategies that help you lead with impact, grow your business, and build teams that thrive. From real estate to cultural agility, from managing diverse teams to creating work-life harmony, Go Hire helps you rise above challenges and step into your next level. Catch Go Hire every week on Now Media Television. We're streaming on Roku, Apple TV, SiriusXM, iHeartRadio, and all other major platforms. Let's go hire together.
Welcome to Go Hire, the show that elevates leadership by exploring the mindset, discipline, and strategies that help high performers rise to the new level. I'm your host, Erica Butler. Today's guest is someone who has spent more than 40 years helping leaders scale their companies, strengthen their teams, and reclaim their freedom. Douglas Wick is a business coach, a broadcaster, a founder of Positioning Systems, a certified eMyth and Gazelles coach. He's actually worked with over 250 companies to create clarity, systems, and healthy leadership structures. More than that, he has very special perspective to share with us because he's a survivor of AML, acute myeloid leukemia, and he has a really powerful story to share. It's a journey that transformed his perspective on resilience, purpose, and the importance of not carrying the weight alone. So Doug, it is such an honor to speak with you today. I'm so happy to talk with you again and just so happy to have you on the show. So welcome to Go Hire.
Thank you. Great to be here and great to see you again. Thank you.
Yes. So in our first segment, we're going to tackle a challenge many leaders face, trying to carry every burden themselves. So many leaders do this, and I think many of us have been there. When delegation feels risky and trust feels hard, leaders become the bottleneck without even realizing it at times. So the first question I want to start with for you is, why do leaders struggle so much with delegating and trusting others at times?
I think it's really about control. Most of us, at some point, probably from the very beginning, we learned that the more we can control, the better we can achieve things. And so we get in the habit of doing things on our own and getting results and realizing, boy, I can do it better than anybody else in a lot of situations. And so that unfortunately becomes a tendency that is difficult to break, like almost an addiction, I'd call it, to count on yourself to get things done. And in reality, we all know that, I think intuitively we know we can't do it alone. And yet there's this feeling of wanting to control. So I think the issue is control and being able to let go. There's a very good book. We've been talking about books before we started this discussion, but it's called Compassionate Accountability. And most leaders, I think, don't believe you can be compassionate and accountable at the same time. And this book is really kind of a Bible of how to discover how to do both of those things, because you can be compassionate with someone, but just because you're being compassionate doesn't mean you can't still make them accountable. Because in order to run your business and in order to perform well, they have to be accountable. They have to achieve. So I think part of that is, the idea of letting go of control and realizing that as a leader, your job really is no longer to achieve the actual things that go on in your business. Your job is to get results through others. And so your job really becomes, instead of doing a lot of tasks, actually getting and empowering and helping others get there. If I can add, there's leadership. Go ahead. Is that right?
No, I said just sure. Please add. This is very exciting. So please add.
There's several in scaling up. We had a group of speakers come in, and one of them, a group of them, were from something called the Leadership Circle. You can look for it. There's an assessment they have that you can do online, your own assessment, and then you can have other people do it. The other people doing it costs money to get it done, but you can do your own doing the self-aware. But what the principles they talk about there for leadership, real leadership, is about, instead of being reactive, it's being proactive, And instead of being focused on tasks, it's about being relational. And when you do that, that self-assessment, you'll see how are you doing in terms of being relational versus task oriented, and how you're doing in terms of the other element as well, which is, you know, being, I'm trying to remember what I said, the focus on being proactive versus being reactive. Because if you're in reactive mode, you're not leading. And if you're not being relational, which is your job, which is to get results through other people, and you're task oriented, you're in that situation where you're trying to control everything. And that's not what leadership is really all about, not at least effective leadership.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that's such a good introduction to all of this. And I think to going off of what you said, we really make our jobs harder when we're not delegating from a life balance, even perspective impacts. It's not just the job, it impacts our families, our communities. But then also, what are we taking away from our team that they're not able to grow and develop and be trusted with new things? You know, it's a big deal to your point about empowering your team. So with that, what is the hidden cost of trying to do everything yourself? Tell us more about that.
Well, again, I think it comes down to you become the bottleneck because you're not empowering others. In fact, you're limiting the growth of your company because you're also not teaching people how to be leaders. One of the, as you're probably aware in scaling up, one of the principles of doing the weekly meeting rhythms and the quarterly meeting rhythms and the monthly meeting rhythms is really to get that leadership team to see, this is how we do it here. This is how our business grows. This is how we set goals for the quarter, the year, and how we monitor that and make sure that we're staying on track with achieving those things. So the bigger problem really becomes in companies like that, it's about, is it about the ego or is it about getting the job done? Are you trying to be the smartest person in the room? If you are, you're probably not being effective as a leader. I would say you're almost guaranteed to not be the, you know, be getting the job done because you have to get the, what we've seen is I've been a coach for, you know, 25 years or more, that the business only succeeds when you have A players in your leadership team, because you can't do it all on your own. And if you are, you're never going to succeed to the extent that you could. You're limiting the business's capacity to grow.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about the A player thing. We talk about that all the time in our business, and you must have A players around you, and A players attract other A players. So it's just this beautiful momentum thing that happens. And just for everyone watching, what Doug's talking about, we connected a lot over Scaling Up. We're both involved with this content by Vern Harnish, amazing organization, 17,000 strong. If you don't know about them, I can't say enough for multi-million dollar businesses, but also new businesses wanting to scale. So yes, I just want to share with them, you know, what we're referring to with Scaling Up. It's powerful content, and I know you and I both recommend it.
Yep.
So with that, how can a leader decide what to keep on their plate? What must they do? And then what can they let go? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think one of the things we talk about Scaling Up as a Scaling Up coach is to have clear accountabilities. One of the recommended practices that we share is the concept of top grading, which Smart, I can't remember his first, there's two brothers, father and son that started top grading with GE. And you have to, one of the things you should do, and a lot of companies don't do this, is to have clear accountabilities. And they provide what they call a job summary scorecard, which lists probably the 6 to 8 accountabilities that each position in your company should have. And you need to start with the CEO to be sure that you are, what are you accountable for? Are you accountable for profit? Well, what does that mean in terms of what your activities are? But if you're not clear what your accountabilities are and what the metrics that are your requirement to achieve, and your correspondingly the other people in your organization are not aware of, it's not very, that lack of clarity, that's right. The business is very, very challenged to achieve what it needs to achieve. So that would be the first thing I think to do. Even before you hire someone, you should have a documented job summary scorecard that that makes it clear, this is what we're hiring that position for. So, you know, here's that 6 to 8 accountabilities. Let's hire that person based on how they've done in their past performance to achieve those goals. And be aware, when I can remember when I was, a couple of us partners started a radio station back in 1991, 92. And one of my friends was a banker who was part of the investment portfolio. And he said, Doug, we got to know what your strengths are and your weaknesses are, because if we don't identify them, then we don't know where you might have, you know, areas that you're blind on. And when you create a leadership team, you really should have people that are aware of those blind spots and are good in those blind spots, so you can cover for them and make sure that you don't fall into bad situations or bad practices because somebody's just blind to something that should be a strength in your organization.
I love that you shared that, because as leaders, we also all have blind spots, mm-hmm. right? And knowing your strengths, where your blind spots are, and making sure you hire for those that are good in those areas, and then you delegate what your blind spots are, it makes your life so much easier, better, the organization runs better. So I couldn't agree more with those comments. I would love to hear a story or example from you where a leader you worked with that you coached, or your experience even in your leadership learning to delegate, and it changed a leader you coached life, or even your life from your personal experiences.
Yeah, I'm thought of one particularly, the two brothers. They ran a furniture store. They ran a commercial and residential furniture store. And when we started working together, one of the things we did was something called the power of one. You might be familiar with it, where you identify the 7 levers of your financials to determine how to get more profit, more revenue, what that's going to mean in terms of cash flow and profit. And when we went through that exercise, they realized immediately they weren't tracking their profit in either the commercial or the residential area. And the two brothers were kind of, you know, co-CEOs. Well, that was a distinction we needed to make. Who's going to be CEO? The other brother became the, in essence, the chief financial officer of the company, and that was his strength. And I worked with them for about a year, maybe a little longer. When we started, they were about $250,000 in, you know, a loss for the year. In the next 5 months, because they focused on that, they got so good at it that they actually ended up making a profit of about $150,000 by the end of the year, because they focused on that, those margins, and it made a significant difference. But by delegating or making one person accountable for the financials, it made all the difference in the world to be able to run their business more profitably and effectively. So
those are absolutely incredible results, and it just proves how important delegation is and the priority it is that everyone knows their role and what they're accountable to. So I love that example. And that is, you know, you put your money where your mouth is. The money actually shows up, which carries the business further. So amazing example as a coach, Doug. So coming up next, we're going to dive into core values, why they often sound great on paper, but they can fall apart in practice. So looking forward to the next conversation after the commercial break.
We'll be right back with more stories, lessons, and practical tools to help you rise in leadership, business, and life. This is Go Higher on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Erica Butler, and you're watching Go Higher on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation that helps you lead, live, and love with purpose.
Welcome back to Go Higher. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to Go Higher and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. On the move, you can also catch the podcast version right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready when you are. So as we welcome you back, we have our next segment with Doug. We're here with leadership coach Doug Wick, 40 years of experience and a powerhouse in the coaching industry. So we're diving into why core values so often fail to become real behaviors when they're so important to the future of an organization. Many companies talk about values, but very few live them, and employees can feel the disconnect immediately. So let's dive in, Doug. The first question I want to ask you today is, why do so many companies have values, but no one actually follows them?
Yeah, I think there could be any number of reasons for that. I think possibly the first one is they didn't put a lot of thought into them to begin with, perhaps. Maybe they haven't revisited them in quite a while. Most businesses are, what would I say, best suited to build their core values around the values that are already present in the company, because otherwise they're aspirational. And so what we recommend, I don't know if you're familiar with, but it's, Jim Collins talked about it in Good to Great, this mission to Mars, where you select 4 to 5 of your current people that you feel are emulating the values, the behaviors that you want in your organization. And, by doing that, you not only identify your core values, but you identify what's already alive in your business and that you want to reinforce. Now, if you're not getting the, if you don't like what's there, then probably you have to build them aspirationally. But I think the other thing, one of the things we did very early on, I remember, we had a what we called an advanced core value strategy. And what we did was we had like 8 different categories that we talked about that made sure that the company was using this in their core values in management. For example, in the hiring process, are we asking questions? We actually helped create a question for each core value so that when you're hiring someone, you're actually identifying, does this person have this core value or not? All right. You also, one of my companies had a wonderful idea even before I got there that was about the idea of creating legends in their business. And so they would honor one employee every year who embodied their core values and lived their mission. Recruitment, we talked about orientation. Do you have something in your orientation process that teaches them about the core values and gets them involved in that training? Appraisal process. We have, you might be familiar with top grading. They have a performance and core values that you grade people on. Are you doing that? Because if the people have the core values, there's a more likely possibility that they're a better prospect to, maybe they're a C player, but because they have the core values, maybe we just need to find the right place where they can perform, better. So those are things that we, newsletters, events. One of my companies has been doing this for years. In their weekly meetings, they award, they have a core value award that gives them kind of like a $10 or $25 gift certificate at a restaurant and allows the person to be recognized in their leadership meetings and in their team meetings with their company and be recognized for those core values as well. So those are some things that can bring those things alive. And I don't think a lot of companies think about doing that. And some of them don't even have them posted somewhere in their business. So
true.
That's a big step.
Yeah, I love what you say about caring about and just the momentum created by recognition and rewards and celebrating when it is lived out. And just to share very quickly from scaling up, because we keep talking about that, in our company we had very general core values, quality, trust. But what does that really mean? What does that really mean to people? And I think core values is a way to really differentiate yourself in the marketplace. So it's not something to skip. It's not something to miss. It's a way to, what the core values are, but like sentences below them of what this really means to your team personally and attracting the right talent through that and how the performance is tied to that. So I couldn't agree more with what you said. I think it's a very deep and meaningful thing that if you don't have them in a company, it's like a number one focus because it impacts everything else, to your point.
Two of my companies have a annual award. One of them did concrete moisture testing and coring, and so they had it's really kind of a silly looking award, that comes with I think it's a $750 or $1,000 gift certificate that they can use anywhere else. But it's just a big piece of concrete, a core, on a, you know, on a plaque. Another one of my companies, the car wash company, we might talk about, they had every year they had the person that was had the highest NPS score at the car wash would get a substantial money award. I think it was, again, about $1,000 or more. That, and they'd recognize them that every year at their Christmas party, which was one of their core values, was customer satisfaction. So that's the way you can reinforce them and make them more visible.
I don't know about you. I'd be excited about a silly looking award tied to $750 or $1,000. That's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't care how silly it looks. That's really meaningful to a team. Yeah. Okay, so further going into this, what does a healthy culture look like when values are really lived out? Can you describe that for us?
Yeah, I think this is probably redundant to what we already talked about, but you know, you reward the behaviors and actions that embody or symbolize your core values. You know, give people promotions, you give people raises, you call them out in meetings, you give them recognition so that there's a tie-in. This is our core value. We're rewarding, we're recognizing somebody that is living these values. So I think, you know, those values should determine who you hire, right? And so that means you're bringing in people that are already living those core values. And so your culture is alive, the business is growing and it's thriving because people are empowered to give more effort in those areas that are you value and bring the business more growth. So
yeah, absolutely.
Well,
you already shared some great stories, but is there a story you can think of where core values guided tough or important decision in your clients or in your own business?
Yeah, again, I had a customer, this is going back, God, almost 15 years, but I remember them telling me this story. I think it was one of their partners or one of their vendors had come to them. And they had offered them an opportunity to explore that they felt, wow, this could mean a substantial growth in their business, perhaps. And they'd spent weeks trying to decide whether they should, make the decision to go ahead with it. And one of the guys in their leadership team went, wait a minute. And he said, this doesn't agree with our core values. And they recognized that what this partner was asking was, I guess, a little bit deceptive, wasn't completely transparent to what would have been to their customers, which disagreed with one of their main core values. And it just was a simple decision then, because they looked at that and they said, sorry, we can't do that because it didn't agree with their core values. And I think, again, you know, there's a value in having core values to help you make decisions on people and things like this when you're partnering with a possible vendor company.
And going off of your point, it does mean walking away from money sometimes. It does mean walking away from what looks like on the surface a good thing, but I think the team respects that, other clients respect that, and you attract the clients and partners you want when you know your values and you stay true to them. It's powerful.
Well, I think just imagine if they hadn't, what it would be saying about their core values. It would be saying, we don't value our own core values because we're doing this. And that sends the wrong message throughout the organization when that's there, whether it's subconscious or not. It is, people are thinking about it and seeing it.
Lack of integrity, lack of trust. And if we don't have that, how do you build a successful company?
There you go. Yeah.
All right, well, going off of that, what's one small step leaders can take tomorrow to make their values more real?
Yeah, I think, first of all, the smallest step they could make was just themselves making sure they're aware of their own values and embodying and symbolizing, behaving in a manner that is embodying their core values. And the other thing is to just recognize people. Just if people love recognition, they don't get, I don't think any one of us ever gets enough recognition for what we do, how we perform, even if it's just showing up some days. When it's really difficult to show up. And so if they can be aware of their people when they're living those core values and just make a small comment to them. It doesn't have to be anything even in public. It can be in private. It makes a significant difference. That's a small thing that they can do.
It's even when people aren't looking, to your point, in private, in public, I agree. Yeah. Awesome, Doug, thank you so much. So up next, we explore what happens when a business grows fast, but without direction.
We'll be right back with more stories, lessons, and practical tools to help you rise in leadership, business, and life. This is Go Higher on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Erica Butler, and you're watching Go Higher on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation that helps you lead, live, and love with purpose.
Welcome back to Go Higher. In this segment, we examine a challenge many leaders know too well, growing without clear direction. When a company expands without a roadmap, it feels like building a house, but with no blueprints. Growth can be so exciting, but without clarity, it becomes chaotic and unsustainable. So this segment is focused on structured growth, planning, real tools, disciplined strategies that keep teams aligned and grounded as they scale, and it really works. So with that, Doug, our expert here, I want to dive into why is growth without a plan dangerous for leaders and teams?
There's a couple of quotes I'm thinking of, one being Dwight Eisenhower, who said, plans are worthless, but planning is everything. And that no plan survives contact with the enemy. And so I can remember one of our scaling up summits. I can't remember who the individual was, but he worked for the Omaha. Trying to remember who I'm talking, but he worked for an airline company, and he said they had their all their presidents of their organizations do 10-year plans. And he said it wasn't that they were looking for them to be accurate necessarily in their 10-year plan, but it was to be aware of what could happen, because without that awareness, those obstacles or those challenges that might come up, they won't be prepared for. And so I think a lot of times, unless you plan, you're unlikely to stay on path, and you're unlikely then to be able to handle a challenge without getting derailed, so to speak. And so plans are very, very important. One of the coaching practices that I did for about 2 years and got certified was Metronomics, which was written. There's a book that I'd recommend people read, which is Three Hag Way. She developed not only the strategy. Plays out almost because it's done by quarter over that 3 years, which means there's 12 quarters during that 3 years. You actually have milestones that you can plug in to your quarterly plan and your annual plan that make planning a lot easier, but also give you the foresight to predict. We talk about this in my new platform, NeuroChange Solutions coaching. Do you want to predict your future? The best way is to create it. And in essence, what Three Hag Way is doing is creating swim lanes to help you know where you're going to be in 3 years and to create that plan so you're aware of whether you're succeeding or not in that plan. So
I have never heard of that swim lanes analogy, but I think it's so genius, because I think so many of us build these 3 to 5 year plans and it's one plan, but giving yourself some options. What if it goes better than expected? Then what happens? What if it goes worse than expected? And that is so genius, because in business, it is hard to predict. I don't have a crystal ball, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was so such good advice for people to develop a few, like have the main focus, but a few options to what to do. Wow, I really love that, Doug. Thank you for sharing. I'm taking that with me.
Yeah, she had one of the things they do very, very well is map out a strategy. And the idea being, for example, if you're doing, you want to get your customer service down to a 1 hour timeline in 3 years, that you're getting back to customers, and maybe you're at 24 hours now. That's one of the things you would map out in your swim lanes is by the end of year one, instead of being at 24 hours, we're going to be at 12 hours. In the end of year two, we're going to be at 4 hours instead of 12 hours. And then by the end of the year three, we're going to be actually contacting people and getting back to them within an hour. Now it should be maybe more rapid than that, but that's the extent of the idea of mapping out where you want to be in order to be at the top level of differentiating in your industry. So.
Well, that's a great example, and it does lead us into our next question as well. So, how do you advise your clients to build growth roadmaps, but that they are clear and realistic? You can measure them. There's a path forward. Can you talk a
Yeah.
little, expand upon what you just shared?
It's exactly what I just shared. Create that 3-year plan, but make it more. I think, when we do a 3-year plan and scaling up, it's always what are the key thrusts and capabilities? 3 to 5. These are the things in order to get to, one of my clients is looking at hitting 50 million over the next 5 years. And okay, so what are the key thrusts and capabilities? How many people, maybe it's hiring. Maybe we don't have a effective hiring process because in their case, they're an engineering company. They're going to have to hire probably about 75 engineers in order to hit that. So what you need to be aware of is maybe you need to do a much better job in marketing. What are those key thrusts and capabilities that you need to achieve in order to hit that milestone? And in essence, I find Metronomic's three hag way just almost even a better way to do that because it gives more specific milestones by creating those swim lanes, and you're actually then tying your strategy to achieving that 3 to 5 year your plan, specifically 3 years, by identifying these are the differentiating factors that will make us number two or number one in the market. How are we going to achieve that? What's that going to look like? And where do we have to be at each stage over that 3 years?
So what I hear you saying, there's a lot of accountability and a lot of stop points on the roadmap, check-ins on the roadmap, breaking up the goals to bit-sized pieces to get to the big goal. So a lot of what we're talking about is scaling and growth and a plan to grow. But on the flip side of that, can you share an example of a company that grew too fast and what they learned?
Yeah, this is probably a personal experience that actually helped me. When I was in radio, one of the my first job as a general manager was in Wausau, Wisconsin, and we were putting on a 100,000 watt radio station there. And what I learned from that experience, because I can remember having dinner with my the owner at the time, and he said, "What do you project? What do you predict we're gonna do in terms of revenue?" And I gave him a number, and sure enough, we hit that number. But what the problem was, even though we hit that number, growth sucks cash. And every month, despite the fact that we were hitting the numbers that we had forecast, we were still having to pay because we were hiring people. We had to put on a 1,000 foot tower that cost a significant amount, probably about $750,000. All this money was being sucked by the business growth, and despite hitting the projections, we needed cash infusion from the business owner who owned a radio station somewhere else. So go about 11 years later or 8 years later, I become a partner with several other people to create a 50,000 watt radio station basically in the same market. And we created a cash flow forecast. And that provided us, when we went to the bank, we knew how much money that we needed to ask for. And sure enough, again, we hit the projections that were forecasts that we had predicted. But if we hadn't had that cash flow forecast, we probably would have looked very stupid to the bank and, you know, would have not asked for enough money, or also would have looked silly to the bank because they would have said, you know, why are you asking for more money? Well, because we had the plan, they could see, and they could see when we were going to be profitable and acknowledge the fact that we had done the planning and realized that our growth was going to suck a lot of cash to grow. So,
well, again, back to a key point of a planning. And the more and more I'm in business, you know, cash equals, it takes cash to grow. It just will, if you're someone that wants to scale, expect that you need to make investments and keep expanding and growing. It's part of the equation. So with that, how can leaders balance dreaming big with staying strategic and steady?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's some really good things that, again, this is in Metronomics that came from a lot of the things that we do in scaling. But I think there's some tools that a person needs to do. You know, you gotta plan, you gotta forecast, but every quarter, you should be evaluating the marketplace. They do something that you'll read this if you read the book Three Hag Way or Metronomics. They do a market map. So you see who are the competitors, who are your customers, how these all interact, what are your, you know, what are the resources that you need? And you need to be aware of what's going on in the marketplace. I can remember one of my customers, we had created the annual plan. The first quarter was ending, and they had one of their competitors was buying another one of their competitors in the same industry. So it was going to, you know, create quite a huge market share that this competitor was going to be taking. And what we decided is to let's shelve the annual plan, because we realized one of the things that happens when there's a merger or an acquisition, there's chaos for a while. Those two companies merging are going to have to merge those two different cultures. And so we decided, instead of having this aggressive growth plan for our new software that we were going to, we decided to put that on the shelf till maybe next year, but work our relationships with our customers a lot stronger, because we felt like there was an opportunity with that chaos that people that were, the company that was being acquired was going to probably have people that go, I don't know if I want to be with that company, because they chose that other company. And the same thing with the company that was acquiring, they're going to be a little bit in chaos. And so they did that and actually had a very good growth year because of the chaos that was going on due to the merger and acquisition. But we shelved that whole annual plan based on the fact that something had happened in the competitive market that they could take to their advantage.
That's a very tangible example. So thank you for sharing that. At this point, we'll be right back. And up next, we close with a practical topic every leader needs: how to fix meetings that waste time.
We'll be right back with more stories, lessons, and practical tools to help you rise in leadership, business, and life. This is Go Higher on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Erica Butler, and you're watching Go Higher on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation that helps you lead, live, and love with purpose.
Welcome back to Go Higher. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand whenever and wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs in both English and Spanish. Prefer podcasts? Listen to Go Higher anytime on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. We're covering business, breaking news, lifestyles and culture, and more. Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always within reach. So we're back to the show with Doug Wick, such an amazing leader, someone I'm learning so much from these past few months even. And in this final segment, we talk about meetings, one of the biggest drains on leadership energy and team productivity. You know, they say death by a thousand meetings, and then when do you get your work done? It's a very real thing. So I love that we're talking about this. Most meetings feel like endless talking with no action. But with the right structure, they become one of the most powerful tools in business. So let's dive into this. But Doug, I have to say, before we do that, where can people find you? You are, again, 40 years of experience as a coach, a leader, a change agent. You are so equipped, and I just want to make sure people know where to find you. So where's the best place for people who want to work with you?
Now they can find a lot of the things that I talk about here on my blog, strategicdiscipline.positioningsystems.com. They also can reach me at my email address, which is dwick@positioningsystems.com, or just simply call me 319-393-2565. Thank you, by the way.
Yeah, awesome. I want people to know where to go because this has been so amazing. And I'm so excited to keep the conversation going, by the way. So let's start then with this topic on meetings. Why do so many meetings drain people, do you think, instead of actually helping them?
Yeah, well, probably the first place to start, if you're talking about meetings, is that they lack an agenda, they lack a time limit, they lack accountabilities, next step actions. You know, and you're familiar with scaling up. We have, I would call it, meetings are that way or are boring or don't get the results because they lack attention and intention. And so one of the things that we do in the scaling up process is we have daily huddles, weekly meetings, monthly meetings, quarterly meetings, annual meetings. All of those meetings have an intention and an attention, and it's really to keep people focused on the quarterly goals, the annual goal, and that makes all the difference, I believe. And the agendas are the same. It's not something that is, you know, the topics might be different in those meetings, but the agenda is the same, so people know what to prepare for. We use Metronomics has, I think it's one of the better tools for structuring your meetings. And people should come to that meeting already prepared. All their information, their data is in the meeting to make sure that everybody's already prepared. And without that, if they're not prepared, maybe they're the wrong leader to be in the group. But those things make all the difference. When people are prepared, you have a regular, consistent agenda, and it's focused on the outcome that you want to achieve for each quarter or month, you have better meetings.
Yes, I agree with you fully on this. And you think about the time saved from the prep, and even that you can look at your calendar and you know your quarterly meetings, your yearly retreat, all of this is scheduled for the next year. So it just takes so much planning out of it. It's already set. And also the beauty to check in with people and see how are you really, because that matters so much. So yes, but going on, how would you describe a healthy, productive meeting? What are the signs of that?
You know, again, some of the things we talked about, but I would say one of the most powerful things, Patrick Lencioni talks about this in the five dysfunctions of the team, is conflict. Are people willing and I call it transparent? Can they in a healthy manner, disagree? Because any movie that you watch that is a value has some kind of a conflict. And what Patrick Lencioni says, a lot of times what's missing out of a meeting is that ability to have healthy conflict. The conflict makes the meeting more interesting, but it also means people are being transparent and sharing what their real feelings are. And that's how you end up. A lot of times the problem isn't that people are conflicted. It's a matter of just being able to voice their opinion. And that makes all the difference in the world when you're trying to make decisions. Being effectively heard means they're more bought into the process of whatever decision is made.
Yeah, to your point, it is a leader's job to know the makeup of their team. And some people aren't going to speak up right away, and making sure they have space to do that. I love that.
I got a short story, forgive me.
Please, that's perfect.
I remember when I was in radio, I had he's now a very good friend, a sales manager. And I remember one time he and I were discussing a decision to be made about something. And we were, you know, he was presenting his point of view and I was presenting my point of view. And we argued for, I'd say 30 minutes or maybe longer. And we came to the end of it. And he said, you know, I agree with you. And I said, well, what was all this? Oh, I was just trying to make sure how convicted you were in your you know, your decision. And it was all more or less playful, but it was so funny because he was very passionate about his opinion. But he was that was an example of being transparent and healthy in his conflict with me. And we still laugh about it today that he argued for 30 minutes for something that he didn't necessarily believe in, just wanted to make sure that I was making committed to it. So, yeah.
Oh, well, that's real. Thank you for sharing that. But I want to hear from you just a quick wins that leaders can try their very next meeting. Leaders that feel like they don't have this down pat, what would you recommend at their next meeting to make it more impactful?
Yeah, and I would say, I was thinking you were going to ask this question, and I'm not sure customers should be looking for a quick win, okay? I think, if they're doing the meeting rhythms, expecting a quick win, they're probably expecting the wrong thing. But in terms of your question, one of the things we did with, we always do in our customer employee data section of the scaling up meetings, there is a segment for customer and there's a segment for employee. I can remember asking a technical, this is a computer that sold computers, and they also did maintenance and helped with their computer programming for businesses. We asked them to call customers, and by calling customers, it had a format, and they at the time that customer was having problems because they had 400 customers every day at the end of the day in their queue that they hadn't gotten back to, right? And all these leaders were going, I don't want to call a customer. I know what they're going to do. They're going to spend the whole time complaining. But we said, call the customer, ask them how you're doing, what's going on in your industry, what do you hear about our competitors, and then how are we doing? So the final question was about, selfish. You didn't start out with that question. Well, we started out doing that. And I only worked for this company for about 7 months because their turnaround was so great that they ended up selling in about 7 months. But they went from 400 in queue down to 100 by the first quarter and down to 50 by the second quarter. And these guys who were calling customers, all right, and dreading it, now we're hearing things like, what do you hear? When they answered, what do you hear from your competitors? The customers were saying, we don't take those calls. We're happy with you. or we're with P&L technology. We don't care about what everybody else is doing. We're happy with who they are. And it made such a fantastic turnaround that the business was able actually to sell within the 7 months I worked with them. And they did very, very well in terms of EBITDA and getting a healthy return on their investment. But that customer question, staying in tune with your customers, finding out what that is a difficult question for some people to initiate and take ownership for, because they either don't want to hear it or they think they already know. And that's the wrong attitude to take.
I agree. That should definitely be a regular part of the meetings and making sure we're aware of what our customers are saying and being diligent about that. So that was such a tangible example of success. So cool that you were part of that.
Yeah.
So Doug, this has been extremely valuable. I just appreciate you showing up today and sharing your knowledge of your time as a scaling up coach and all the best practices you put in place, including regular meetings and how to make them impactful, and just so many pieces of wisdom you shared with our viewers today. So thank you for your insights and experience. Your wisdom shows leaders how to release unnecessary weight, bring value to life, and grow with purpose, creating movement meetings that will actually move the business forward and not wasting our time and sucking our energy. So I think your examples were super tangible, and I'm just really happy you got to share them today. I learned a lot from this time with you. So to our viewers, yeah, absolutely. We'll keep the conversation going for sure, but keep pushing higher to our viewers. Keep leading intentionally and keep building businesses that thrive from the inside out, people first always. So we'll see you next time on Go Higher. Thank you.